Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Irish Winona Bleach are an alternative rock band that was formed in 2018. They began after a 12-date Russian headline tour under their former name of R51. Prior to this, they played BBC introducing stages at Reading and Leeds festivals, supported Feeder, and performed on a televised anniversary of the BBC's introducing music show in Northern Ireland at a sold-out show in the Ulster Hall alongside Therapy, Soak Villagers, and The Divine Comedy. Winona Bleach are Melissa Shannon on vocals, Johnny Woods guitar and vocals, Carl Gilmore on bass, and James Foy on drums. The band released their debut single Eyes Burning in January 2018. They supported Alice in Chains on the Irish leg of their world tour in 2019, after which they retreated to an abandoned warehouse in central Portugal, where they recorded their debut album Moonsoak with Bull Rider Jones in 2019, early 2020. In August of 2021, ahead of announcing a release date for Moonsoak, they signed a record deal with Fierce Panda Records. Moonsoak was mixed across the lockdowns in 2020, with the title track recorded in isolation and added last minute to the album. Three singles were released, Glimmer, Moonsoak and Drag, the latter being playlisted on BBC Radio Ulster, as well as charting in the top 40 of Amazing Radio and being featured on multiple Spotify editorial playlists. The band performed at Other Voices Festival in 2022, ahead of SXSW and New Colossal Festival in New York City 2023, amidst heavy touring of the UK and Ireland. In 2023, they toured Ireland with fellow Northern Ireland power poppers Ash and embarked on recording a sophomore album in 2024, releasing singles Swim in the Bay and I Deserve That ahead of an 11-date UK tour in October of 2024. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Johnny Woods and James Foy from Winona Bleach.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
We are in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and we are doing okay.
I'm doing good. I meant to be in work, but I've ditched it.
Yeah.
Please don't tell
it's, I don't know what time it is with you, but it's like 2 p.m. here, obviously, for us. Yeah. Oh, it's the same, isn't it? No?
No, we 2 hours ahead. So we had 4
2 hours ahead. Yeah, I see 4 o'clock. Cool.
But what's interesting for us is that in South Africa, we don't have, you know, when the times change. So when you guys change times, it's weird for my brain because we just stay the same the whole year round. And then I have to start working out. Okay, now you guys were 1 hour behind. Now you're 2 hours behind.
So it's shit, a bit, yeah.
Where does the name Winona Bleach come from? How was that chosen?
Prior to being Winona Bleach, Mel and I and Carl, our bass player, were in a different band. And we had actually done quite a lot of touring around the world. And we'd done a Russian tour. And we had just come back from a tour of Russia, actually. And then we decided that we hated the band name after going to, you know, great lengths of telling the world about us. Mel and I have always been huge, like, fans of Winona Ryder. So I guess part of it was combining Winona Ryder and Nirvana's Bleach album together. We were also bleaching my hair at the time, which probably was a factor in that as well. Yeah. I always thought it'd be a funny idea to have like a band name that people thought it was the singer's name as well, you know, and it's happened a couple of times where people have called Mel Winona, you know, so I guess that was also kind of the reason. So yeah, that's really it. Like the story really is just, we were watching Stranger Things or Edward Scissorhands or some kind of Tim Burton film with Winona Ryder in it. And we also just loved Nirvana's Bleach album. So we combined the two. It's kind of simple as that.
Okay. So now James, moving over to you, at what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the music world, the creative process. And how did that journey progress to meeting the rest of the band and where we are today?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it was ever like a conscious decision that I wanted to do this. It was kind of just something that I was always not shit at, so I decided to do. I started playing music at a young age and stuff. Started with violin, then progressed on the drums kind of naturally. Didn't have to worry about being in tune, I suppose. kind of took a hiatus for, I don't know, 5 years in my 20s, and kind of started getting back into the music scene around the same time. I think Mel was the first one of you guys that I met. We kind of shared like a similar space where I had like a practice room I could make noise in, and she had like an art studio. So met her out in the balcony a couple of times, then was introduced to Johnny and eventually the rest of the band. And then, yeah, joined the band over a year ago.
Yeah, 18 months, 18 I think. Months. Something like that.
Something, yeah. 18 okay. months ago.
It's important to point out, though, that space that you just talked about, you said about it in a way that it seemed like a nice place.
Oh, it's a shithole.
It's a horrible place in West Belfast that basically artist residents, people are artists, rent it. Yeah. And it's like this horrible, big, dusty building. Yeah. And
where dreams go to die.
Yeah. And Mel had a studio space up there at the time. She still does. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you were just out in the smoking area. And then I remember Mel came home, or she came to rehearsal. Yeah, came to rehearsal like a couple of weeks later, a couple of days later. And she was like, "Do you guys know James Foy?" And I was like, "I know his name. Like, is he a drummer?" And they're like, "Yeah." She was like, "He's fucking awesome." Like, he's really cool. And I was like, "Yeah." And then, yeah, you came into the studio here a little while later because I was recording a band that you were in at the time.
That's right.
And then we ended up just being really good pals ever since, really.
So. Yeah, definitely pals before we were band members. And,
yeah, because we were sending each other songs and stuff before he was in the band.
Yeah, songs that are going to come out soon, probably.
Yeah, one of the new ones.
Yeah, I was a massive Winona Bleach fan. Like, I remember being in the car with my dad and playing this song called Cherry Dream that was off the Sugar EP. And I just remember turning to him and being like, that is a band I want to play drums in.
Yeah, and here he is.
Okay, so Johnny, with you, at what age did you think, cool, you want to be in this creative world, this creative space? And how did that journey progress?
To be honest, like, my dad tells this story all the time about, we went on a family trip down to Dublin, and I think I was a toddler. I must have been maybe 3 years old. And apparently I was obsessed with the buskers that were on the streets, you know, playing acoustic guitar and like doing their thing. And I begged and begged and begged for a little guitar. So I think my parents bought me a little plastic guitar, and I busked at 3 years old on Grafton Street in Dublin. So it's just never been even a question in my mind. It was like something I always did and always have done. And I don't really think I can do anything else. I mean, like, I've definitely had jobs and fucked most of those jobs up just because I want to be in a band and do things. So I've spent a lot of time like throughout my teenage years listening to a lot of music and soaking as much of it in as I could. And yeah, it was just, I guess I just never had the question of doing anything else. It just was always in me. None of my family are really, my brother's a DJ and he plays piano and he's a really successful DJ. Him and I are the only two in the family that ever pursued anything musical, like professionally. And there's not really even any amateur musicians in our close family anyway, you know, so kind of a weird one. I don't know why or where that came from, but I just don't want to do anything else for better or worse.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because it's like almost there's no choice if everything else that you do to kind of fund the music feels like you're pretending.
Yeah, that's it. You're just like cosplaying as a normal person when you're not doing music, you know. So
what's coming up for the next 6 months? What's happening in your guys' world?
I think we can tell some of it. Some of it we're supposed to probably not talk about, but okay, we know for sure that we've finished recording our new album. That's done. We did it in this very space that we're sitting in, which is it's an old ballroom above a working man's club in West Belfast that I basically rent as a studio. So it's just a big old ballroom. It's drafty and smelly and kind of grim, but it sounds really good. We recorded our new record here with Andy Bradfield and Avril McIntosh, who they came over from London to work with us. They worked on a couple of the tracks on our first record, and they're just really, really close friends at this point, but they've kind of co-produced it. We finished the tracking sessions. Probably we still have a couple of things to touch up, but I think we did like most of the vocals were done over at their studio in Battery in London, which I think we finished up like fundamentally finished up like a month or two ago, maybe a little bit more than that. So it's and Andy is kind of ongoing mixes. Ongoing doing mixes for it. We are we're doing South by Southwest here, which we're really excited about. I think that gets announced in like a couple of weeks, so we're safe here to talk about that.
Sign the NDA.
And then we have a couple of other things that we definitely can't talk about yet until they're nailed down, which also involve us doing some stuff over there in the US. So Yeah, album is big thing right now. We're going to probably put a single out before we go over to do South By. And then I think there's sort of small talk about another UK tour, and maybe we dip our toes into Europe a little bit
That would be great.
near the end of the year. So yeah, that's I think what I can talk about.
Okay. That's perfect. And we must try add South Africa to that list. I'm just saying.
Oh,
No,
do you know
yeah.
what? If the invite's there, we'll definitely
Yeah.
try our best to do it.
Okay, so now let's dive into your creative process. Obviously, there's a number of you in the band. How do you guys create a song from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes? Is it easy every time? Is it the same sort of route or pattern every time? Let's unpack the band's creative process.
It can be easy or
Yeah,
frustratingly
it
difficult.
changes dramatically depending on the song, honestly. I mean, what I think has been a massive shift in the band's dynamic has been James joining the band, because before that, it really was a lot of it was just me demoing stuff at home, sending it around the band, everybody creatively editing it down to make it work for what they think the vision of the band should be, and then we would play it live a bunch, and then that would be what the song is. But since James has joined, I think I used to be essentially the only lyricist, and now it feels like I've got like a co-writer with me, which is the best thing ever, you know. So the order of events in terms of writing a song, I think there isn't one. It one, you know, the song that we just put out, I Deserve That, it was quite literally a demo riff that I wrote in my bedroom, and then took it to the room and played it with Carl, and then it evolved, and then we played it live and so on and so forth, and then it kind of became a thing. Lyrically, it was something that I just knocked together kind of in my bedroom. But on the flip side of that, the song that the next track we think we'll release anyway, a song called Not Cool With It, that was a demo in my bedroom as well. And but then ended up, when we put it out, we brought it into the room and played it with everybody. It became completely the opposite of what I remember writing it like. I don't know. It evolved. And then there's a song on the record called Binks, which is essentially all James, which was we were well, you could tell them the story. I've told the story a million
Yeah,
times.
I've told the story. I don't know if I'll be able to tell it as well as you, but when we were in, I think we just maybe started, we had Andy and Avril over, and we just started recording the album, and Johnny and Mel were walking home one night and stumbled across a cat that looked lost and kind of toyed with the idea of bringing it in inside and making sure it was okay. And eventually he just decided to just leave it and let it wander home. And then the next night, coming back from the studio, saw like a missing cat poster on the lamppost. And they're like, "Oh my God, that was the cat we just saw last night." So I think a week passed, and
Every day of that week,
every
we're
day
searching for this cat, you know, just trying to help find this cat. And meanwhile, we're recording an album, you know, so like every day we finish our day's work recording and then we start walking looking for this cat.
And yeah, eventually after a week, it's pissing down with rain and you're walking home and you hear a meow under a car and you find the cat and you stick it in your jacket and Mel runs to get the number and calls it and the owner comes running across a bridge and
And as soon
Binks.
as all that happened, James was like, "That's a song. We have to write a song about that." So then he just comes into the studio, like, was it, I guess, the next
The
day,
next
or
day,
he just was like, "Check this out." And then he just played it on an acoustic guitar to us. And then we were like, "No way, this is great." So then that became a song that's now in the set. Actually, it's on the album, but it's also in the live set because we get to tell that story, but also, you know, and that creative process was completely the opposite of what we normally would have done. Like it wasn't a demo in my bedroom set around the band. You know, it was in this case, it was James just sitting down showing us something he'd come up with out of nowhere and
It was kind of
based on
like,
the
yeah,
cat.
I wasn't, it was, it wasn't a totally serious song when I
Yeah.
originally wrote it, but turned
It
into it.
turned into something really meaningful. It's a lovely,
So.
I'm really proud of it. It might be my favorite thing on the record, but we haven't heard the final result of the whole album yet, so I don't know.
So
But
might be
certainly playing
everybody's
it live.
favorite.
Okay, so you referenced this. So what do you guys enjoy about playing live?
There's an exhilaration to it, but I think the main thing for me, what I get a kick out of live is the energy that it has compared to, you know, doing it. I mean, I work in a studio every day. I'm in this place every day. I record bands every day. I know kind of what like it's like to live in a studio and do studio stuff. But there's the immediacy of a live show, like the almost what's the word? Impossibility to replicate energy, you know,
second by
like,
second as well.
You know, we've toured a lot. Like even since James has joined, I think we've done maybe three tours.
Yep.
Every single night, you do not know what you think might happen is not what happens, you know, and you have to sort of resign yourself to that. And you can be nervous and sit out the back and everything, but there is no predicting what will happen. It could be the best show that you've ever done in your life, and it could be the worst
like
show you've
ever done. Like that Leicester one we did?
Yeah.
That was unparalleled. That was crazy.
We were on tour, and we were doing this run of shows up and down England, and I think we had hoped that we'd have the album out by then, which was ridiculous of us to think. So we were basically promoting a new single, and we were up and down the country, and then we got this sort of show booked in Leicester, sort of right in the middle of England. And our agent just said, look, I don't know what it's going to be like. I've never booked anything in Leicester before. It may be good. It may be shit. We don't know. So we were like, okay. So we get there and it's basically like a theater. And we're like, okay, this is kind of cool. Big stage. Fine. Whatever.
How are we going to fill this?
Yeah. How are we going to fill this place? And then we were talking to the promoter who sort of selectively used the right words to not worry us about how many people were going to turn up. Like, he didn't say there was no tickets sold or anything. He just sort of went, yeah, we'll see what happens and all. And we were like, But he looked after us. He was a lovely man. He great dressing room, loads of booze and like, look, you know, we were well cared for. And then by that stage, we sort of went out onto stage and we were like, oh, there's absolutely nobody here for this show.
Well, but there's six people.
There were six people, but the support band were telling us that they're from Leicester. And they do not do gigs in Leicester. Like, it's not a hot city to be doing shows in. So we were like, oh, shit, okay. So we go and play the show anyway. And actually, we probably play better that night than any other night of the tour.
It was the best show of the tour. It sounded like, amazing.
Those six people got probably the best show of the 10 shows we did that run. But, I mean, only just on a... In a poetic justice way or something.
Yeah.
We were on stage and we were just absolutely on fire and we were just talking shit and having really good fun with the six people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And they just, I think a lot of that six maybe didn't know who we were before we even turned up, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the end of the set, they fucking knew who we were, you know? It was really good, you know? Great. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've got more to add about live, but like, that's my vibe on it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Mine is the kind of interaction between all of us. You know, there are things that happen during a set, good or bad, that you just don't get kind of in the real world outside of that 45 minutes or an hour that you're playing. I love how detached from reality it feels, but I absolutely struggle with that when you're touring as well. You know, the immediacy of it, like you're sitting around for 9 hours of a day to play a 45 minute set. And I absolutely struggle with that. But having said that, I was kind of like, touring is uncomfortable for me, but that last tour we went on was just the best. How long was it? 2 weeks?
It was
amazing. And I feel like for me personally, we've really settled into that kind of groove. And yeah, I honestly cannot wait to get back out for the next one and like just enjoy that. And
yeah, just like you definitely get used to, well, there's a certain amount of prep involved mentally before you go off and a certain amount of prep involved mentally for when you return. And for me, touring always has, you know, I was told, I have this great mentor, a guy called Dave. He's kind of our band's mentor. I mean, he's been there for everything and our every milestone in my musical career, but certainly the band's musical career. Dave used to manage bands throughout the late 80s and throughout the 90s. And he always told me, I remember when I first went on my first ever tour with, you know, whatever band it was back in the day, you know, he told me like, when you come back, you're going to feel like shit for at least 2 weeks and you're going to have post-tour blues and you just have to know that. And you know, the first time that happened to me, I changed the band name. That was when Winona Bleach came, was during post-tour blues coming back from a Russian tour. So like it most definitely like, you have to know that. So when you go off on the tour and you're at this high constantly where you're just laughing and having fun with your pals for 2 weeks and you're constantly, and there's up and downs and there's bad shows and good shows, but you're there for each other. And then by the end of that run, you sit in your own house and you look at your own four walls and you realize that, you know, you're back to reality again. And it's like that's a strange experience. But when you prepare yourself for that, you know that's coming, you can get over it. You know, it's cool. Like, you know, the other way to fix it is just never come home.
I love me a CD. I love the journey of the choice, the aesthetic of holding something. For me, it's an energy exchange just to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you do. I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, even cassettes, vinyls, massive comebacks. Last year alone in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. In the UK as well, there's a basket of goods that, based on exchanges, they gauge taxes. And vinyls have been in the basket for longest while. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, those products are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the younger kids, the teenagers, the late teens, early 20s that are diving into this world, not the older nostalgic people. And we also have these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your guys' observations of the landscapes at the moment?
I know I've seen that change. You know, I think I'm old enough now to have seen when CD was booming, CD went away, streaming took over, download took over, and then now all of a sudden physical is back big style. From a perspective of a working band like we are, scraping along, doing what we're doing, trying to make it, vinyl for us has been the most profitable thing to have next to a t-shirt. And so I, as a collector of records, and I have a good few at home, and I really love the format. As a collector of records, I love, you know, the aesthetic, like you said, holding it in my hands, reading the notes, looking at the liners, everything. But on the from a business angle, from a business perspective, as a musician, it's to me another piece of merchandise that is absolutely essential for a working band on the road. So you have to figure out a way to make as many records as you can and sell as many records as you can, because the profit margin is amazing on them. They are beautiful product to hold if you do it right. We've been really lucky in that the first pressing of our record, we sold out of it. So there's a repress of it. We were really lucky that our label were financially cool with that, but it's massively helped us fund, you know, being on the road. It's kept us alive. You know, that's my observations, James. I don't know, like, if you've...
As you said, like, as a collector myself, I, again, witnessed the kind of, like, death of CD and introduction of streaming. And, I mean, yeah, streaming's still massive, but, like, thank God for the vinyl resurgence, as you said, from a business perspective. Like, I mean, everyone's always going to want, t-shirts. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, actually, I mean, I think I when I was still not in the band, I got the last ever record of Sugar, the Sugar EP.
Oh yeah, our first EP.
And it's just sitting in my house, and it's like, it's kind of cool. Like, that'll always, it's such a special EP for me, because that was my introduction to Winona Bleach, but also knowing that I got the last ever one for sale is even cooler.
That's so cool.
And you know, it's as a fan, I appreciate it. And yeah, obviously, like, they sell well, and they keep us on the road.
You know, and there's that you just said, like, there's the longevity and the memory associated with that product. You know, like, I have CDs that were my first ever records that I ever bought, you know, first ever albums I ever bought were CDs, and I have them at home. And that when I lift that CD up and I look at it, it brings back so much memory.
Yep.
There's not really that experience with streaming. I can go back and listen to albums that I loved, you know, on streaming platforms. But I forget things existed. There was right. So here's an example of that. Actually, on the road, we're a four piece, but when we started the band, we had Aaron Black as a guitar player, and he's a beautiful friend, still is massive part of the band's, you know, friendship circle and everything right now. But back in the first, second, third tours of Winona Bleach, Aaron used to be the guy who would recommend new music constantly to us and, like, put stuff in, you know, on our Spotify playlist. And while like 2-3 days ago, I was sitting at home and I went, there's one song that popped in my mind. I was like, oh my God, that was Aaron. Now, I would, in normal worlds, go look through my records or look through my CDs and find that thing that Aaron suggested to me. But I couldn't remember the song. I couldn't remember anything about it. I couldn't remember the artist name. And I had to text him and call him, and we had to have a conversation about trying to work. And we had to Google. And we had to sit on the internet and research what that song was. And then we found out what it was in the end. And it was Samia, you know, the girl Samia. But it just that annoyed me. I was really pissed off because I had to be a research scientist all of a sudden to figure out what fucking song my friend played. Like, you know,
bullshit,
but on the flip side, Aaron also, him and I were big Taylor, James Taylor fans. And I have a copy of Gorilla at home. And every time I lift Gorilla, I think of Aaron. And like, you know, it's like, So it, yep. that longevity on having that physical product is, yeah. I don't know, it's so yeah. much more meaningful as a, it becomes an Absolutely. Actual thing.
Yeah, it becomes a thing that you associate memories and friends and everything with. I mean, there's a track we have a kind of like a playlist together for album inspiration that we put together. And one of the tunes I added was Creature Comfort by Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. And the only, I was a massive Arcade Fire fan when the first album came out and kind of dwindled off. But my girlfriend picked this like Creature Comfort single up from a local like used records market, only purely because it was cool artwork. And she was like, don't know what this is like, but it looks cool. Mm-hmm. So go ahead. And I listened to the single and I was, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's like, that's why it's on that there. And right. like, you know, I would never like, I don't know. I kind of go into this kind of like blurry mist when I have to search through text on a phone screen. I just need someone to be like,
look at this product.
Yeah. Scratch my brain with this artwork and yeah. you might like the music. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And it's physical and I can hold it and I don't have to fucking go through. Yeah.
You know, you can't sign a t-shirt either. So like people at the end of gigs are always asking us to sign the records. And mm-hmm. it's like that there's an immediate connection there. Yep. Like, you know, I think back on that last tour and like most shows or at least a good lion's share of them, mm-hmm. there were people wanting photos and, but also wanting their records signed.
Yep.
And we were standing next to them and they'll have that on their, you know, in their collection for years and years. It'll never go away.
Yep.
And they have that, you know, it's like, they wear the t-shirt and it shrinks in the wash and then, oh shit, you know, but the record kind of lasts, you know? So absolutely. Yeah, that's the long-winded answer to that. But I think it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And I really think that I'm really proud that we've been lucky enough to press records and we're going to continue to do that.
It's a privilege.
I'm very, very proud of that, you know, for sure.
Mm-hmm. One of you is going to have time to think. So I'm going to James first and then Johnny, you'll have a couple minutes to think.
Okay.
I know if I had to ask you both of you this question, literally 5 minutes time or 10 minutes or 20 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. James Hurst, if you had to push play to 5 songs by other artists once you finish this conversation, if you can't think of specific songs, just 5 artists you'd push play to, what would those 5 songs, 5 artists be? And if you have 5 songs, what would those songs be?
Whew, okay. God, I hate questions like this because I can immediately not remember any music that I've ever listened to. LCD Sound System, one of my favorite bands of all time. New Body Roomba by them. They did it for the film White Noise, I believe it's called, and it is just one of the best tracks I've ever heard in my life. Sabrina Carpenter has been a massive one. Johnny got me really into Sabrina Carpenter, even though she's everywhere at the minute, but Johnny was the one to be like, listen to this. Her track Juno off her new record is like on repeat all the time for me. Jeff Rosenstock, who is a guy from New York, I believe. I haven't really delved too deep into him, but another band of mine, someone compared us to Jeff Rosenstock and I immediately just started listening to him flat out. And he has a track called Doubt off his album Hell Mode that was out last year, I think. I'm quickly just looking. Oh yeah, Little Sims, her album Drop 7 from this year, the opening track Mood Swings is amazing, dark and grimy and class. Let me see who else. Yeah, Creature Comfort by Arcade Fire, just because I was just talking about it.
Yeah.
It's great. It's super synthy and like straight. And after joining this band, I've got a newfound appreciation for just like straight drum beats and like grooving and playing to the song, and not something I really associated with Winona Bleach before I joined, but I think after a lot of like talking
about it, it's been a positive inspiration for sure.
What we wanted from this album was, you know, some mayhem and some groove, and I think that is absolutely one of those songs that played a big inspiration.
Okay, Johnny, over to you. Yeah, that's five. Johnny, over to you.
Okay, so he knows that I've been playing this one song to death this last fucking...
It's a great song.
It's awesome. Addison Rae's Diet Pepsi track. Man, I cannot stop playing that song over and over. It's something about it. It just triggers something in my deep, deep brain that just cannot get out of my mind. And I'd never seen the video for it. Mm-hmm. So like, I must have listened to the song like 50 times and then I watched the video and I was like, the video is even amazing. Like,
I still haven't seen
the video. The video is fabulous. We'll put it on after. Okay. But yeah, Addison Rae's Diet Pepsi track. There's a producer that I've loved since I was in college. There was a pair of producers, they're brothers, J Paul and AK Paul. They call them Paul Institute. They basically produce for lots of different people, but J Paul's track Jasmine is one of my favorite tracks of all time, and that's another one that I will play right away right now. If I was to, you know, be stuck and have to put something on, it'd be J Paul's Jasmine. Mad into Remy Wolf. I love Prescription, the track Prescription. It's just like a Prince tune. Grew up loving Prince. So
said Prince.
Yeah. Well, I should say Prince as well, but yeah, I mean, that's just like my latest new fixation was Remy Wolf. Love McGee, and of course Are You Looking Up? I think I prefer Are You Looking Up to Rock Band. I know his new single, Rock Band, everybody's going nuts for, but I think Are You Looking Up still
it's great.
Better. Like, it, again, triggers me in a better way. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of J. Paul and the Paul Brothers. Yeah, so that's what I really like about it. Yeah. And then because we're a rock band and like we all love the Pumpkins, and I'm not going to say the Pumpkins because everybody expects me to say the Pumpkins, even though like they're my favorite. But Poppy's Flux album, there's a track called On the Level on that track, on that album. I mean, every track on that album is amazing, but Flux is, sorry, On the Level is like the one that sounds most like a lot of the songs on our new record. Big into Poppy. So there's my five that I definitely will be playing today at some point, for sure. Cool.
Yeah. Love that. So, James, heading to you first, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
We're Winona Bleach. Thank you for listening to us. Absolutely go check out our new music. You might hate it. You might love it. I hope you love it. We really like it. I really like it anyway. The new stuff coming out maybe isn't what you'd expect from Winona Bleach, but it's great, and I can't wait for everyone to hear it.
I have to echo that exact last sentiment. It is not at all what people will expect from us, and in the best possible way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.